Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. My music didn't work again. today we're going to chat with Ian Citron, and he's a photographer, and he does all kinds of things: planes, models, movies, athletes. He's very diverse, and that's one of the things we're going to talk about. Hi, Ian. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me yet again. It's great fun.
So cool. You're always fun.
Thank you. I try to be. one of the things perhaps I do best.
I did warn you that my music may not work, and it didn't work again, so I do apologize for that.
Well, that's fine. At least you didn't make me sing.
I wouldn't do that to you. I wouldn't do that
Thank
to you.
Thank you.
Although I'm sure you're
Thank
singing.
You.
Can you sing Ain't She Sweet?
No, not going to happen. I'm a much better photographer than singer. Thank you.
You're a wonderful photographer, but yeah, you're so diverse. I thought maybe you can do all kinds of things.
Thank you. I work for Adulation.
I can adulate. I'm very good at that.
Thank you. I'm a creative. All us creatives work for adulation and applause.
Oh, that's true. That is really true. And
it is.
You don't want to ask for it, but you're kind of sitting there like, you're like, okay, anything, just a little bit. Nope, nothing. Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Tell me you love. That's actually the part that gets most creatives in trouble too, because they forget that they also have to make some money.
Oh yeah. Yes, I know that well. You've been very diverse. Do you want to talk about, we were talking before the show, you want to talk about diversity in your art?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's really kind of intrigued me as kind of a self-discovery. I'm not a young man anymore. I've been doing this for a few decades. And, you know, when you first get into photography, and I guess into other creative arts, but especially in photography, you're always told to specialize, and I used to live by that instruction or that concept. You know, finding something that you do and just sticking with that particular thing. And during the course of that, you might end up trying to do things that you might not necessarily otherwise really want to do. For instance, let's just say, and nothing wrong with being a wedding photographer, but some photographers, you know, kind of put themselves in the niche of being a wedding photographer, even though they don't particularly like it, because it pays the bills. But they specialize in it and they stay there, and it can be somewhat emotionally and long-term financially draining and ineffective for somebody. So I think along the way, I've learned that you're perhaps better off chasing or involving yourself in all of the things that really do interest you, photographing the things that all the things that might interest you, and finding a way to making them work for you, making them pay, as opposed to finding something you can just do to get a check.
That makes sense. Did you always do different kinds of things? When you were younger, and then you were told to stay on one track, and you changed, or were you always on one track at the beginning?
In the beginning, I was like so many, and again, just as a photographer, I wanted to go off in a track. Wasn't particularly sure where I wanted to go. I had a lot of diverse interests, but I was constantly chasing those things that would pay me. Not that that's wrong, but it can be self-defeating because you end up doing things that maybe you won't do as well, or maybe long-term won't won't give you the satisfaction you want, and you end up not being as successful at it as you would be otherwise. You know, I was lucky, and when I started in photography, I was trying to shoot pretty much everything, looking to chase a buck. I was lucky at some point I did fall into the bodybuilding world, which is something I did enjoy. And once I started chasing that, I became successful in it. I perhaps stayed in that niche for too long without following a lot of my other interests and diversifying some. So I think that kind of burned me out after a while. But yeah, I did follow that niche, but luckily it was a niche I enjoyed. As I've gone on further, I've realized that diversifying into the other areas and doing more work in other areas, while they didn't at that point in time immediately provide me a revenue stream, long term it would have and would have gotten me a little bit further ahead.
Would you recommend to a young photographer to follow their imagination more than the career path? Is that really it?
I'd recommend that they follow the things that intrigue them, that excite them, that get them interested, that let them follow their craft and learn their craft, and finding a way to make those things pay for them. I think today we actually have more options in creating ways of getting paid than we may have had a couple of decades ago. You have to be a little bit more creative. You have to be a little bit more entrepreneurial, because there's not that many, shall we say, jobs or specific assignments, but you can create things for yourself. For instance, just randomly, let's say you decided that photographing roofs of houses was something you really enjoyed doing. Well, today you have the opportunity of going out and shooting roofs of houses, self-publishing your own books, maybe creating, artwork that you could be in your own pop-up museum, or for sale on websites that sell those kinds of things. You have more opportunities to create things, to create a revenue stream for yourself, as opposed to actually going out and getting assignments. So I think that has somewhat changed and broadened opportunities, whereas we looked at it before as saying, well, opportunities were closing because those magazines weren't paying as much money or paying anything, and the opportunities of getting well-paid assignments were somewhat limited, and there's so many people out there doing things. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because I feel the same way, because I was always weird when it came to what I wanted to do. I studied acting, I studied writing, and I studied archaeology. And none of them were really money-making propositions, but people would say, archaeology? Where does that come from? And it was like, well, study of people and ancient man. It goes along with the history and all the stuff you need to learn for the other crafts. And the diversity doesn't necessarily have to follow what other people see. Like, it doesn't have to be connected in someone else's eyes. It just has to be connected in your eyes. At least that's the way I think.
Yeah, and if I were a photographer, let's say I had an interest in archaeology, I can't imagine there's a lot of assignments getting for archaeological photography work. I perhaps might go out and self-assign myself ways of shooting what I wanted to shoot and finding a way of turning that into revenue. And again, whether you're self-publishing a book, creating an art gallery showing of some kind, any number of things like that, I would be looking in that direction as opposed to beating myself up, going around trying to get hired and getting, told, 10 times a day, 7 days a week for years on end. So I really think that if you're going to be a creative, you have to be a lot more entrepreneurial to be successful. But it opens up a lot of opportunities because you're your own boss. And if you're a a good boss and you follow your own direction and do the things that you otherwise might tell other people to do and do it yourself, you can make your own success.
I actually think that I understand where you're coming from, but I actually think that there would be a lot of opportunities because archaeologists want their work documented.
Yeah, and again, it's an area I'm not that terribly familiar with, but it seems like it's if it were something that you really wanted to do, there would be a way of making it pay. And
yeah.
I really urge people to find a way of making what they're doing pay, as opposed to running out and finding something to do where you will get paid, because you end up doing things, you know, for the lowest amount of money. You know, you'll end up running out to go shoot something for $60, whereas you would have been better off spending the time finding the thing that you were doing and enjoying doing and finding a way of making that pay for much more than that $60.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Plus, you denigrate the market. When you work for cheap, you denigrate the market. You further ruin it for yourself and ruin it for everyone else.
When you started working as a photographer, and I know you've been doing it for a long time, but what would be the chief difference between then and now? Is it the Internet?
Well, certainly back then there was none. So that was a big game changer. There were many more magazines out there, and magazines ate up a lot of content, and we're paying more money. I don't know how the whole thing changed, because it's not just in photography. It's in other industries, other work areas, where over the years, specific amounts paid for things, assignments of various kinds just seem to going less and less and less as far as being paid. So it certainly coincided with the Internet. But back then, yeah, there were many more magazines that ate up a lot of content. Getting published, there were, you know, not that many people getting published and working in it. So we all seemed to do pretty good back in those earlier years. When the Internet came around and website, you know, getting published on websites became much more important, there was still a lot out there, and there was a lot of opportunity out there, and there was a lot of getting paid out there. More and more people did come into it, and during the course of that, people were coming in and just trying to make get any amount of money and we're again denigrating the market by driving prices to the bottom. We had a time frame in the mid 2000s, 2007, 2008, 2009, where magazines really started to take a deep decline and disappearing, and magazines that were 400 pages became 100 pages. Magazines that were, you know, monthly became quarterly, and so as much content wasn't required. So there was a downsizing. We've now seen a little bit of a reverse in that. So much now is more online. There is a call for more content, but the price paid for that content is often not very high, and is often requested to be free, but there is a demand for much more content than there used to be. So there is that in itself creates more opportunity, but you have to be careful about it.
Do you think that as a tool for you to get work, not for you personally, because you already get work, but for someone who's trying to get as a photographer, as a tool to get work, it's a good device?
Oh, it's an extraordinary device. I mean, there was a time and frame where getting work amounted to having printed pieces done by the thousands and mailing them out to art directors and editors and publishers and so forth. So it was quite costly. You would have portfolios that you would be shipping out FedEx, you know, all the time. You'd have to have a half dozen or 10 of those on hand at all time. And they those things could put together cost you $1,000 each. So it was a very time and cost encompassing project to market yourself. You'd be flying around the country to go meet with art directors. Now you're really doing everything online instantaneously. So there is an advantage in that respect. The downside is there's a lot of it from so many more people. So it's a little bit more competitive. You got to be a little bit smarter.
As a writer, I see that because when I first started, when I was in my 20s, sending out magazine articles and stuff like that, you would have to send it out and you'd have to make sure your self-addressed envelope was there, and it would just like you cost everything for every single part of it. You have to pay for Xeroxing because there was no printing out and all that other stuff. It was much more costly than it is today to send out an article.
Sure. And I don't know. I mean, I attend a lot of events like at the Palm Springs Photo Festival, and there's lots of seminars and symposiums about these kind of marketing tricks and ways of doing things. And for the most part, you know, printed pieces are not that well accepted. They don't get really kept that much. Something has to be really, really, really special for an art director to hold on to it as a printed piece. Whereas, otherwise it's just going to go in the trash. Whereas otherwise, if somebody sees something that you're getting online and you grab their attention, they're more likely going to bookmark you and pay attention to you and maybe revisit you every couple of months and then one day say, gee, you know, that's pretty cool. So that might be a way of going. But again, that's chasing a job, as opposed to creating an opportunity and an avenue for yourself, which I think is actually a better way of spending your time.
Yeah. Back then, that's what I used to do. Now it takes like 10 minutes. I take my stuff, I put it in, all the stuff into an email and zip it off, and it's done. Where before, it was like, okay, this has to be perfect, and this has to be, and it has to have everything in order. And you don't have to do that anymore.
Well, you know, I must say for me personally, I've changed over the years. I used to be a prolific magazine reader and compiler and keeper and everything else. And as of the last couple of years, I've pretty much moved to doing everything online. And I stopped, even though I enjoy them immensely, I stopped getting printed magazines. I can't hold on to them. I can't refer to them as readily. I don't have the storage space, they just around here gathering dust. I have too much going on to have thousands of magazines just sitting around that I really can't remember where I saw something anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Going to the topic a little bit. You just did your show. I thought you'd like to talk about it because I know you always have fun doing this.
Well, I'm always at air shows because I do a lot of work at the Palm Springs Air Museum, but we just recently in September, for the second time, did the Reno Air Races, which is like the Indy 500 of air racing. And so that's a lot of fun. It was always, you know, when I was younger, that was always like, hey, that is really cool. I would love to go to the Reno Air Races and photograph. And so for the second time, I've been part of the team actually racing. At the Reno Air Races, and that's pretty exciting stuff. You know, you have all these airplanes flying around a course, a racetrack essentially, but in the air, racing each other for. It is the fastest motorsport in the world.
You've been in the plane when they've been racing, though. Aren't you scared out of your mind?
No, you don't actually get to be in the plane while they're racing, but I've flown in a lot of these planes, yes. When they're actually racing, you can only have the pilot in them. But yeah, I do. Both times I've flown up and back in one of the aircraft that we were racing. So yeah, that's pretty exciting. That's really bucket list kind of stuff.
That is so cool, though. I love planes.
Yeah.
Really fun. To take pictures of it and to film it must be just incredible.
It's when I was 9 years old, I was building the model airplanes, as so many kids do, and hanging them from the ceiling in my room, and always maintain an interest in aircraft. But again, as I moved forward and got into photography, it kind of fell off the radar screen because I was pushing myself to maintain my niche. Again, by going to that scary word, specialization. So I never allowed myself to get outside of it. Whereas if I had, I probably would have been enjoying this and may have been making money in it sooner. So that's why I try to tell people, kind of follow your interests and making a way for it to pay off for you, as opposed to just following a niche and sticking in that. So that's one of the things that brought me to that conclusion. Because now I get to do, a lot of things that I really, really enjoy doing. And I find a way of making them pay for me in one way or another.
Do you find that when you're doing something like an air show, as opposed to like taking pictures of the planes flying around when you're at the air museum, do you get distracted because of everything that it's sort of like a? Because I've been to the one here in San Diego, and it's kind of distracting. Mm-hmm. There's so much going on. It's sort of like a fair. Does it distract you as a photographer from your job?
Well, yes and no. For one thing, a lot of times my role at the air shows is not limited to just photography, because I'm also involved in a lot of flight operations. So I could be gassing an airplane, fueling an airplane, or I could be getting it ready to take up with passengers or something like that. So I have my other distractions anyway, which has become kind of a more fun part of what I do, an outgrowth of the photography, just a place where my photography took me, because it's my photography that is the primary purpose of a lot of this, is for to create the content for specifically for the Palm Springs Air Museum for their social media and their advertising and their public relations and so forth. But I get to do a lot of these other things as a result of it. It's distracting. I mean, when you get used to it, things kind of slow down for you a little bit. So whereas if you're just there on an occasional basis, thinking you had to pay attention all the time, those extra few seconds between when something is starting and happening allows me long enough time to get my camera up to my eye and shoot a photo or even shoot video. So I think it's just a matter of being used to it. So it works for me. I'm distracted, but I'm not distracted. I'm still very focused.
Makes sense. It makes sense. You do all these different things. Do you have, it's going to be a weird question, do you have a favorite? Do you have one that you love more than anything else?
It's funny. When I get up in the morning, it's like I think of all these things I really enjoy doing. I would be very hard pressed to want to stop doing any of it. Sometimes I'll get up and I'll say, "Gee, I miss doing this. I have been doing a lot of this other thing lately. Been doing a lot of aircraft, and I'd rather be out there shooting women for a fashion feature." Or I'd rather be, and setting that up. I'm always kind of torn a little bit. So maybe I'm a little bit distracted in that regard, and that it's always the other thing that I think I'd like to do more of, and then I'm doing it, and then I go back to the other thing. So there's a balance. I don't know if I've achieved it. It's like this Saturday I'll be at Lake Havasu for an air show. We're flying out tomorrow. We're flying back Sunday, and then we're doing two flyovers on Sunday. So I'll be involved in that. But if I were not going to Lake Havasu, I really had an alternate plan of perhaps doing some other shooting that had nothing to do with airplanes. So don't know. I have some latitude in that regard. So yeah, I don't know what my favorite would be. I love shooting some of these really edgy features I've been shooting because I do love scantily clad or naked women, to be honest with you. I love the art and I love the people. And I love shooting these more opulent fashion features, which I've gotten lucky enough to do lately. I love shooting. I have a shoot coming up with a women's fitness person. That's going to be a big all day shoot coming up in about 10 days, I guess. And then I have more aircraft to be involved with through the course of November.
Wow. Do you have a shoot coming up that's going to be at an air show, and you have some other shoots? Is there some place we should be looking out for you? I mean, I know you have a website.
This Saturday I'll be at Lake Havasu with the Hangar 24 Air Fest. That's where I'll be. November 10th is the anniversary of the Palm Springs Air Museum. I will be there shooting and also be doing some flying probably because we'll be flying aircraft all day. It's kind of like a mini air show. Same thing on November 17th. It's the Palm Springs Air Museum Props and Hops. So we're going to have a couple of dozen craft beer brewers on site, as well as food, and again flying airplanes all day. So that's kind of fun. So that takes me into November. November 4th, I'll be shooting actually a fitness shoot with a woman, but we're doing that. It's a closed set. We're doing it at the Coachella Movie Ranch, which is a place I have not shot at yet. It's managed by the Palm Springs Film Alliance, and it's a 31-acre property, I believe, with something like 7 or 8 structures, houses on it that all date back some time and have all kinds of interesting features and stonework and old cars and so forth. So I'll be there on November 4th, and that sounds pretty exciting to me.
That's really cool. Could you give your website so people can find you?
Yeah, I'm just secondfocus.com, always have been, secondfocus.com.
And you're on Instagram?
I'm on Instagram. It's just my name, Ian Citron. And I'm on Facebook. Again, it's my name. I spend a lot of time on social media. My Facebook page is what I keep up mostly. Also, my blog on my website. I try to keep up pretty much almost as regularly as Facebook. Facebook has been you talk about getting business. And Facebook for the last decade or so has been a real boost to how I get my business.
Absolutely. Actually, Facebook is. I actually use Twitter and Facebook for business more than anything else.
Yeah, Facebook has still been my mainstay, and it's been very successful for me. I'm pretty happy about that. I also manage the social media for the Palm Springs Air Museum, and we have really, really built up the Facebook page to become a real powerhouse public relations entity for the Air Museum. So if you go to the Facebook page for the Palm Springs Air Museum, you'll see a lot of what I do in the way of aircraft work. From inside the cockpit as well as outside.
Do they have a website? I mean, obviously they have a website. Do you know what the website address is for them?
Yeah, I think it's just palmspringsairmuseum.org or psairmuseum.org. We'll get you there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's mostly their Facebook page. I pretty much am putting something up daily for the Air Museum, and it's primarily content that I've created. That's one of the other thing that's been fun is I have the opportunity with them to really create all the content or much of the content. So it's given me a lot of latitude to both explore my photography, but enjoy aviation.
Yeah. when you're doing something like the Air Museum's webpage and you're putting your own pictures up and stuff, do you also type the content in that explains it, or is there a writer? And if there is a writer, do you guys work in concert?
I do mostly the Facebook page and the Instagram, and I also do the Twitter. The website is just too much to do. The website is actually managed by another organization, and we have another person that interfaces with that. So although I might be providing photos or something else for the website, I primarily concern myself with the social media.
Okay.
There's too much for just one person.
And what's your blog name? Is it just under your name, or is it under Second Focus for your blog?
It's of course linked also from my website, but again, it's just secondfocus.blog.
And do you have anything exciting?
I've been doing my blog on this platform for years. I've had people say they go to my blog and they can spend hours and hours and hours just scrolling back, looking at all kinds of things. And again, there will be everything from art nudes to fashion to aircraft. I'm pretty diverse in what I put up on my blog. It's my blog, so I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, that's the fun part,
so
right?
And I do talk a lot about, photography and some, and equipment. And I do some of that because that's, photographers were all kind of geeky in some respect. And everybody likes the things that they don't own, so they're always looking at other stuff. So I talk a lot about that and different equipment and so forth and what I use and why I use it and so forth.
I found out that there's a section of the San Diego Public Library downtown that has, like, old history, and they have these old cameras that go back to the early cameras from the 1900s. I mean, they were, like, 1905 and stuff, all the way up to, I think the last one they have is, like, an Insta camera that you open in the back and put the film in. And we were looking. And they were the older ones are so beautiful. We were really enjoying it. And then we came to the modern one, and we both look at each other, and we said, "That's Dad's old camera."
Well, and what's fun is there's some simplicity in that. I still have, a half dozen Polaroid cameras, and every once in a while I'll drag them out and do a shoot with them, in conjunction with my more advanced digital cameras, and I really enjoy it. I did an entire magazine feature once on Polaroids. And lately I've embraced Fujifilm came out with their instant cameras, their Instax series. And I own like three or four of them now. And I love shooting those. I mean, the film is readily available. It's relatively inexpensive. And it's got a really great look to it. I just love these Fujifilm Instax cameras.
So my dad had, six different, when we were cleaning up my mom's place when my mom passed away, she had, all cameras stacked in the, he must have, six Polaroid cameras back there.
I still do, and at least two, three of them are operational, and I will use them. But again, the latest version, the Fujifilm Instax, are less bother. The film is readily available and much less expensive than getting the newer Polaroid type films. So the cameras are really foolproof, and I just love shooting them. They're really a lot of fun.
You want to know the first time I ever saw a Polaroid camera was on a plane, and it was my first flight ever. I was about 12, I think, and we had moved to New Jersey, and we were flying to California for a visit, and when we flew over the Grand Canyon, one of the stewards brought out the brand new Polaroid camera, and we were kids, so we didn't know this. The pilot tipped over the plane slightly so we could see the Grand Canyon on both sides of the plane, And
yes.
So we could take our picture with the Grand Canyon when the hostess came over to take our picture, which was free. It was basically like a dual sale for American Airlines and the camera. But my little brain thought that was normal. I thought that was the way it was when you went across country. So the next time I went across country, I was about 20 years old, and we were flying across the Grand Canyon. I was by myself. I'm like, when are they going to dip?
I did a shoot a few months ago. I was in downtown L.A. at a studio and did one shoot one day, one shoot the next. And the first day, I purposely brought along one of my Fuji Instax and was shooting a lot of instant photos along with my, you know, my medium format, you know, $25,000 Hasselblad in Broncolor lighting. I mean, I probably have $60,000 of gear doing this shoot. And there I am with my $75 or $100, Fujifilm Instax shooting all these photos, having a great time and marveling at how simple it was and how much I loved it.
So you still use that even now? With the Fuji camera, right?
I use them all the time. Really, I have three sitting on the shelf right behind me, ready to go. Maybe four. Three. And then I probably have 10, 20 packs of film here ready to go for each one of them. So I enjoy them immensely. I'm sorry I don't get to take one with me all the time. Sometimes I just have limited space and because of what I'm flying in.
That's really cool. I mean, it's really fascinating how you can bring old technology in and still love to use it, whatever it is. It makes you feel sorry that people won't even consider it. It's like some kids won't watch a black and white movie because it's black and white, even though they had color at the time that the black and white movie was shot. They didn't. It's black and white, so it's bad.
Well, there is a change of foot. I think the Fujifilm Instax is now the number one selling camera in the country. So,
cool.
So people are embracing it, and film is on the upsweep too. Both Fujifilm and Kodak are reintroducing film stock because of its increasing popularity. So films that were canceled, no longer being manufactured, are now being manufactured again and selling quite well.
I think that's great. I think it's good.
Yeah, it's fun. Well, again, I go back into, you know, find what you enjoy doing and doing it, finding it, assuming you're not just doing it as a hobbyist, which is fine. But if you're working as a professional and trying to make a buck, find what you enjoy doing and find a way of making it pay as opposed to running around and trying to find something that will pay you regardless of what it is. So, again, you're better off doing something you enjoy, finding a way of making it paid as opposed to taking some job to photograph something all day for, 12 hours and making $60. Plus, it's just plain not good for your self-respect.
That's true. And you're exhausted and you have nothing to show for it.
And then you just kind of get stuck in that cycle. And it's a very debilitating cycle. Find a way of making what you enjoy doing pay for you. There's a lot of opportunity out there. You just got to be a little creative. Well, you got to be a lot of creative. Yeah, and I will admit there has to be some luck. So,
but that's good. Creativity is that's very important to human beings.
No, we have a big world. Due to this internet, the world is different than it was two decades ago. Some opportunities went away, and there are more opportunities in front of us. So you don't concentrate on what went away and how it doesn't work anymore.
That's true. We're coming to the end. Did you have anything else I forgot that you wanted to mention?
Well, I don't know necessarily. I think that's really the things that were on my mind primarily. You know, I think that really covers it. You know, as a photographer and for photographers coming up, I'd say, again, just kind of follow what you want. Build your relationships in the industry, whether it be with manufacturers or reps or your dealers and so forth. They can really help you along the way. You know, I've had, luckily, great relationships with, you know, manufacturers, you know, whether it be Fujifilm or Hasselblad or Broncolor or Canon, with dealers of Sammy's Camera. I've been buying everything from Sammy's Camera for years. You know, and they've always been there when I've needed something. If I got stuck or, you know, something came up and I needed some help, advice, and something quickly, something broke or whatever. You know, those relationships are important, and more important than a lot of people just go out and price shop. You know, don't buy everything on Amazon. You know, get a relationship with people, and you'll get more from it. You'll find a way, they'll help you find those ways of making money, whereas Amazon is not. And I'm not just picking on Amazon, actually. I like Amazon. But, I mean, just by example. So, I mean, just build those relationships. Everything's still relationships. You know, social media is relationships, but in a broader sense. So, you know, just build those relationships. It's all about shaking hands, and we shake hands either online or in person.
Absolutely. I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me. I always love talking to you.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind. I'm flattered, actually. Truly, I am.
I do enjoy it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you for chatting and sharing.